Everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, what is the Lakers' magic number when it comes to getting into the playoffs? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. It's always free. It's never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show and participate in a fast-growing community of Lakers fans who are leaving us comments, leaving each other comments. One of those comments, Andy, by the way, was noting that we should not be bragging about the fact that it's not behind a paywall. Because podcasts are never behind a paywall. And I would like to remind that person on YouTube, go look around. There are a lot of podcasts behind paywall. So we do have a conversation coming up. You spoke last week with Sam Pollard, the director of Bill Russell Legend, the Netflix documentary that is really, really just, if you particularly if you're a person who loves basketball history, is worth checking out on Netflix. You have had a conversation with him last week. Bring that to people at the end of this show. Pat Beverly is a new home. That is exciting for Pat Beverly. He has vowed revenge, Andy, on the Lakers for trading him. But I thought this was interesting. We'll start here. Darvin Ham, he's not just talking about making the playoffs. He's talking about top six. His goal over these last 23 games is a top six finish for the Lakers. That is bold. Goal set from the Lakers.
Yep, it certainly is. He said during Wednesday's practice, quote, "The goal for us is to come out and try to be the best versions of ourselves every game, but definitely if we can go and secure a spot, that is our goal right there. If we fall into a play-in situation, so be it." I love the idea of them being currently five games below 500 and falling into anything. But
that's where we just happen to end up, like, you know, we slide that way or whatever. Sure.
But continuing the quote, but our number one goal is to secure a spot, not just throw games off here or there and wish for a play-in. We want to go secure a spot. Again, I would remind Darvin, you can't just throw games off here or there and wish for a spot. It is mathematically impossible unless several of the teams ahead of you just decide to quit.
I saw a little bit of reaction to that Wednesday evening, on whether it's on Twitter or, other Lakers social forums, that they're, there's an arrogance there that they should be taking one game at a time and not looking at it at any particular goal like that or a seed like that. I actually don't mind this. I mean, I think all these guys understand, like, you got to go game by game. You can't, look ahead. You can't do any of that stuff. But I do think it actually is good to set a big and ambitious goal that actually reinforces how many games they need to win just to get the smaller goals. Like, if you going to land in the top six, like, you got to win a lot of games, not just a few. And so, you might as well think big here. It doesn't bother me, at least.
Dude, they have to win a lot of games just to make sure they get the play-in. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're winning a lot of games, win as many as you can. Like, I did a little bit of numbers crunching and trying to project what it would actually take to get the sixth seed. That is currently Dallas. They are 31-29, 22 games left to play. Lakers 27-32, 23 games left. They are 3.5 games behind Dallas. They are currently 0-2 against Dallas this season. They had the Christmas loss, and they had that brutal double overtime loss. So, they need to win the two more games they have against Dallas this season. Just practical implications for the whole season. But in particular, if you want to get that sixth seed, you simply have to beat Dallas both of those times, especially because if you start getting into – and you have to pass Dallas, because if you start getting into tiebreakers, since they're not in the same division, it's going to get to conference record against the rest of the conference. Dallas is currently +7 in the conference. The Lakers are currently -6. So
it's not, you probably have to pass them. And it's worth noting, you mentioned, just the records and the games back. There are six other teams.
Sure.
Six other teams between the Lakers and the Dallas Mavericks.
But I'm just, Brian, I'm focusing eyes on the prize right now. I'm not thinking about those other six teams. And according to both Basketball Reference and Tankathon's metrics, Dallas has the easiest strength of schedule for the rest of the season. So that being said, like, you're going to have to win huge. Like, if Dallas went 12-10 for these remaining 22 games for them, which would be their current pace, you know, they are currently they're 2 games above 500. It would mean the Lakers have to go 17-6. But quite frankly, I don't think they can go much lower than that to get into the play-in anyway.
Okay, that is actually what was going to be my next question, because we spent most of Wednesday's show talking of, you mentioned Tankathon, you mentioned Basketball Reference, like all of these different places that do the metrics and they do the analytics and they have put out the projections of the Lakers' odds for finishing in the top 10. You know, Basketball Reference has an 85% chance of them missing the top 10 entirely. You know, even some of the more favorable ratings you see, one of the ratings that they have on 538, for example, which is a little bit more based on kind of current events, what the rosters look like, who's hurt, what schedules are, they still, and this is a favorable one, have a 70% chance of the Lakers missing the top 10 entirely, not, missing the playoffs, missing the top 10. And so, it is a daunting stat, but one of the things that we didn't ask, when you talk about Darvin, it's a good time. What is that number? How many games do they have to win? What is the bare minimum you think that they'll have to win to get into the 10? Forget the six for now. I don't want to squash Darvin's dream here, but what is the right number, do you think?
I think they have to win at least 15 games if they really want to be confident about this, and give themselves a realistic chance of doing something that is mathematically very difficult. I think they're going to have to go 15-8.
That is exactly the number that I had. I think, is it possible you could make it with 13 or 14? Yes. But I think it's pretty unlikely. And so if you want a safe number, a number that, like, if they win 15 games and don't make the postseason in one form or another, into that top 10, I would be genuinely surprised. I think, a +7 over these last 23 and you still don't get in, that would be surprising to me.
Well, it's also too, I mean, if you go 15-8 over these last 23 and don't make it in, to some degree, it's like, look, man, what are you going to do? They played really well. And if nothing else, it gives you some confidence with their options moving forward, because these last 23 games aren't just about trying to make the play-in or, Darvin's goal, the playoff outright. It's about figuring out, do we have something moving forward?
Like, okay, hold that thought, okay. Because I know you did radio today, 710 ESPN, and guys were kind of talking about this issue and what these last 23 games mean for this year and next year. I want to get into that because there's kind of a magic number for that as well in terms of how confident you would feel with carrying this group over into next year. So I'm curious what that looks like. Talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by FanDuel. The midway point of the NBA season, not really the midway point, but it's what we call it, has just passed us, and that makes it the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000, $1,000. That's bonus bets back, even if your first bet doesn't win. Just Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, super easy to use, and you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained, or you can get a little spicy with an exclusive bet like the 2x3. Two three-pointers scored in the first 3 minutes. The Lakers now actually have a roster equipped to do that. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a
first
bigger payout.
First 2 or 3 minutes of a game, not the first 2 or 3 hours.
2 to 3 minutes. I just want to make sure that is clear. 2 3-pointers, first 3 minutes. You can get a bigger payout with the same game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your first no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA.
So, Sam Pollard, Andy, your interview with him, we'll get to that in a few moments. Again, that documentary is well worth the time if you're a basketball fan, if you're a fan of American history, because obviously Bill Russell is a figure that transcends just the sport.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both know, I think, the history of the sport reasonably well. We're not experts, but there's a lot that you just learn along the way with big figures in the game just for doing this as long as we have. There was stuff in there that I had genuinely no idea about. And when I've told other people that I think know the NBA pretty well, they also didn't know this stuff either. So that there's a lot you're going to learn about a really, really interesting guy.
So we'll get to that in a few minutes. We both kind of agree the Lakers have essentially 8 losses that they can play with. You know, you go 15-8, you give yourself a really good chance to jump over 2 teams and get yourself into the top. You know, they need to jump over 2 teams and catch a third. So to make up the gap on 3 teams and get it.
In certain respects too, really quick, it's not just 8 losses. It's the right 8 losses. Like, they got to be against teams you're not chasing. Like, the teams that they are directly chasing, it is really important that they win those games. Those cannot be too many of the losses.
Right. And you look at some of the opportunities, you know, the games this weekend in Dallas, you know, catching the Mavericks, as Darvin would like to do, Memphis and Oklahoma City. You know, that's tough. Like, to sweep those 3 games is no easy task. It makes tonight's game against Golden State at home, no Steph Curry, no Andrew Wiggins, almost surely out, the Warriors have said, with for personal reasons. And so, you know, you face a 29-29 Warriors team without 2 of their 3 best players. You have to win.
Yeah.
You can't make this 1 of the 8 games that you lose.
Especially after you beat the Warriors without LeBron as part of this new look Lakers anyway. Like, you've already just beaten these guys, and this time around, you're going to have LeBron. You're going to have Mo Bamba. Like, you are truly going to have your full cast of players.
Yeah.
You have to win.
LeBron and AD are both listed as probable for this one. And, you know, the finger's fine. We should have mentioned that at the top of the show. Finger's fine. Everything's good. But this is, I can't even say the first time since opening day, because the Lakers had injuries at the beginning of the season. This is the first time this season the Lakers have had an intact roster. Mm-hmm. It obviously looks different than the group they had, but they have every player who you would want to put on the floor is available to play in Thursday's game. All of them. And, you know, again, this cannot be a game that you give away, particularly, Andy, since we also learned that the second game that they play against the Warriors, that's on March 5th, up in San Francisco. That one, you know, the Warriors – actually, no, I'm sorry. That game's also at the Crypt. That one looks like Steph probably will be back on the floor. So
it's possible he'll be reevaluated.
They're reevaluating him again in a week, right, with the hope that he'll be able to get back on the court. So if that's the case, March 5th means Steph will be playing. So
yeah, and you got to win that one too.
Yeah, you do. But you really got to win the one where he doesn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're not going to win 23 games. They are going to lose some in between.
Honestly, if they want to get the six, I was thinking about the math. If Dallas plays reasonably well, it's not hyperbole to say they may have to win out if they actually want to.
Well, Dallas or, you know, New Orleans or because like, again, OK, Dallas slumps. But there again, there are six teams.
Yeah.
Six between them. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, Minnesota gets a little hot. The Warriors get a little hot. Somebody, Oklahoma City wins some games. Like the Jazz go, like there are six teams. And so between them and Dallas, but you mentioned it, like, I think the other half of this is what is considered successful enough with this group that you say, okay, we missed, you know, we had a good run. We missed the playoffs. But we saw something with this group over the last 23 games, 26, if you include the ones they played before the break, that we believe it makes sense to re-sign D'Angelo Russell, to pick up the option on Malik Beasley, or turn down the option and give him 3 years instead of one, maybe at less money or whatever it might be, to bring back Rui Hachimura, to, you know, obviously sign Austin Reeves and so on and so on, pick up the option on Bamba. How many games do you think that is? Because, you know, as opposed to send everyone out the door and let's go try to get Kyrie Irving.
I will never underestimate this franchise's urge to just clear the decks and go for another superstar, even if Rob Pelinka really said a lot of things that made somebody like me, who's been preaching for a long time, start building next year's team now, and his talk about pre-agency and all that stuff gave me some degree of optimism. I still just know what this organization is. I think if they win 13, 14 games, you have to start really heavily considering that, because that's really being done with very little practice time at all. You know, during the All-Star, I'm sure guys communicated. There was a big team text chain, all that stuff. I know there was film being done, coaches in contact with them, but
you're not playing.
Practically speaking, they did not have a lot of time to get this thing going. They're going to be going against teams that know each other very well. You know, that probably have more continuity than the Lakers have had, because even if other teams made moves, I don't know if anybody shook up their roster more than the Lakers. I think if they can be 3 or 4 games above 500 in that 23 games, you got to heavily consider at least bringing back some of these guys intact.
Yeah. I mean, for reference, 14-9, for example, is 600. It's about a 600% winning percentage.
Okay. You know, maybe even a little lower. 600's pretty good.
Pretty good. Again, and so, I mean, that in a down year for the West, in a weird sort of tightly packed year for the West, 600 would be good for third in the conference right now. Basically, you're the Grizzlies. Grizzlies have a 614 winning percentage as they go in, you know, the post All-Star break stretch. In the East, that would make you fifth. You'd be, you know, nestled in behind Cleveland. But that's pretty good. And, you know, the question becomes, if, you know, because again, to do the Kyrie thing, and we're not the only superstar you're talking about here in terms of at least cap space to sign someone, it's Kyrie. There is no one else. You're clearing out everybody, and you are, you know, going back to the veterans minimum thing. You're doing all that stuff, and you're going to have a big three, and you learn much of anything. Is that better? If you go 15-8, you know, 15-8, 14-9, do you think that big three is necessarily going to be better?
I
don't.
I think that would be, I just feel like that would be them not learning anything from what has happened over the last few years. I think also it's become so clear that if you're going to continue having this thing built around LeBron, then it is imperative that the cast around him
yes,
be reliable and give him less to carry.
Be plentiful.
It's not just reliable,
it's plentiful.
Right. And you already have to bake some absences from Anthony Davis into the cake. Like, that's just what this is. Do you really want to make it so your number three is a complete wild card in Kyrie? Like, do you really want that?
I'm sorry, was that a rhetorical question? Would you like me to answer? I do not. This is one of those things where almost any star, my answer would be no. There are people is it Giannis? I'll roll the dice. Jokic, whatever. But once you get outside that, upper tier of the most reliable and bankable stars, my answer would be no, because, it'd be different if LeBron was 29 instead of 39 next year, and Anthony Davis was, a guy who could rely on to play 70 games a season instead of 7. My answer would be different, but that's who they got. They're not going to get a better core two than those guys.
No,
probably.
Or look, if you are that concerned that Anthony Davis won't give LeBron enough support that you feel obligated to bring in Kyrie, the answer there is actually trade Anthony Davis. It's not bring in Kyrie. Yeah. That's the answer.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. So we'll see what happens. Again, this is one of those games. It's like, you got 8 to play with. It's not an official number, but that's the number I have in my head. And if you win 3 or 4 out of 5, you go 6-2 over a stretch or whatever, you start to give yourself a little bit of wiggle room to where you could drop a game later on the season, and that maybe you get closer to being able to play 500 and still get in. Like, these games coming out of the break are just so critical, these first 6 or 7 or 8 games. Do want to let people know that today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started today. Andy's conversation with Sam Pollard, director of Bill Russell Legend, the Netflix documentary, that's next.
So really happy to bring on our guest, Sam Pollard. He's a documentary filmmaker and a producer whose previous subjects have included Arthur Ashe, Sammy Davis Jr., and the relationship between Martin Luther King Jr. and the FBI. He was also a producer on the outstanding Spike Lee documentary, 4 Little Girls. His new documentary is now out on Netflix. It's called Bill Russell Legend. It digs deep into the life of an athlete who was iconic on and off the court. And even, I believe, a Laker fan, like everyone listening right now, will find this story compelling. Sam, how are you?
I'm good, Andy. How are you?
Good, good. To begin, what's the process, like the thought process of and the approach when you're choosing a documentary subject, someone like Bill Russell, who's obviously fascinating, important, but he's also been covered a lot over the course of his career. Like, how do you approach either the angle that you want to find or new discoveries telling the story? How do you go about doing that?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's been a lot of documentation about Bill Russell over the years. So our take was to sort of figure out chronologically the arc of his story from Monroe, Louisiana, all the way up to the present, and then figure out what's the new way, a new way of sort of digging into this story. And one of the new ways we came up with was to go back to his books, his 2 memoirs, use those and find excerpts from those to help tell his story. Because in those books, Second Chance and the other one, he sort of really gives you some insight into his sort of personal perspective about what it means to be not only a basketball player as a member of the Boston Celtics, but as a black man in America during some very turbulent times in American history, during the height of the civil rights movement, the developing black power movement, people like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale. He was surrounded by all this stuff happening, and it had a great impact on him as an African-American man. And it made him understand that that he needed to not just be a basketball player to just shut up and dribble, but he wanted to have some, he wanted to have some insight. He wanted to participate in the movement, which is what he did.
One of the things the film digs into is there's an intensity about Bill Russell. Like, he's an intense intellect. He speaks intensely. He even laughs intensely. Like it's described, that cackle, you know, it's it's a very overwhelming, powerful laugh.
Yeah. He was an intense man. No, you hit it right on the head. Very intense.
Did he ever afford himself the ability to relax? Because it doesn't seem like it, like there was much to that.
I think in all honesty, Andy, I think Bill Russell probably didn't relax until he beat your Lakers in game 7, 1969, and he walked off that court and he decided that he was no longer going to be a Celtic. He was no longer going to have to deal with the Boston fans, and he walked out on his family. He left his family, got in his Lamborghini, and drove to Los Angeles searching for a new life. I think that's when he relaxed.
It's interesting that you bring that up as the moment of relaxation, because that's obviously, I mean, it's a professional crossroads, and it's, you know, geographic crossroads, all those different things. But, you know, leaving your family as part of that process, how, if at all, did he go about squaring that circle?
Who knows? I don't think you really know. I mean, that last part of his life, which there's a lot of documentation, I don't think and from the material that we had, Bill Russell never went there and discussed that. He might have, in thinking back on the book, Second Wind, and the other book, he might have talked about it, but not really in any detail. You know, I know that he did stay in touch with his children, but he did get divorced from the first wife. He married 3 more times, mm-hmm. You know. I think, you know, who knows why we do these things? I mean, you know, obviously he was, as you said, he was very intense and he was a very complicated man. And obviously he had reached a crossroads and he had to make some decisions. And you know how life is. Sometimes you don't make those decisions and you suffer for not doing that. And then you make those decisions and you have to deal with the aftershocks.
Right. We talked about squaring different circles. Like, there's a lot in this movie about the dichotomy of race in America, and, you know, specifically when it came to Russell's life, when it came to basketball. And he was highly aware that he was part of this entertainment commodity for white audiences that otherwise didn't want him, whether locally in Boston or the country at large, other than just his basketball abilities and you know, his abilities to entertain through basketball.
Mm-hmm.
What was he ever able to find a piece with that? Because, you know, he did stay connected to basketball after he stopped playing, and, you know, he eventually got his proper, you know, Hall of Fame acknowledgments, and, you know, the acknowledgments from the Celtics. But this was it seemed like a very difficult thing for him to kind of wrap his mind around.
I think it took him a while to really find what I would call emotional closure in terms of how he felt about the Boston fans, how he felt about, you know, the accolades he had received and he was going to still get. And I think it was age. I think that you get to a certain age in life and a certain kind of mellowness starts to set in.
Right.
I think that's what happened to Bill Russell, you know.
Did basketball, do you think, ever make him happy? Because he talks a lot. There's a lot in there about the emptiness that he felt.
I think he was really happy probably for the first six, seven seasons. And then, you know, the wear and tear of basketball, the physical wear and tear, the mental wear and tear. As you know in the film, by the time he gets to 66, 67, the luster had gone.
Well, and also, too, it's interesting. I mean, if I'm remembering the timeline, at least sort of roughly, that's about 6 or 7 years into it, is also when socially you start really seeing a change in the world that seemed like, you know, very much enveloped him.
Yeah. So, you know, listen, he you know, there's this probably a certain level of kind of anger and cynicism set in. You know, America was coming off after Dr. King's assassination, after Malcolm's assassination. We were in the throes of the Vietnam War. You know, he was looking at the still strong racial divide in a city like Boston with the whole busing issues. All that stuff had to weigh on him. And then, you know, he'd been pounding the courts for years playing ball. And, physically it takes a toll. Mentally it takes a toll. All those things had to sort of weigh on Mr. Russell.
You mentioned Martin Luther King Jr., and there's this really affecting moment in the documentary where Russell describes how he declined the chance to be on stage alongside MLK during the March on Washington because he didn't feel that he'd earned that opportunity. And later, you know, he gets compared to Muhammad Ali, who sacrificed his career. And he said, you know, I haven't really done anything. You know, Bill Russell was really active in this world. Do you know if by the end that he either, if not satisfied with his work, do you think he at least felt like he had been worthy in his efforts when it was all said and done?
I think he would say he was worthy as a man, as a black man in America. Okay. I think that that would probably be more primary than, you know, all the accolades he received as a basketball player. I think he would say.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that was it.
It's funny, actually, too. Like, there's this persistent narrative now that it's only the AAU generation of NBA players that are buddy-buddy, and that's why, you know, the league isn't competitive enough. But, you know, we saw in The Last Dance Michael Jordan palling around with rivals during the playoffs, and we know that Magic and Isaiah were extremely tight before a falling out that had nothing to do with their NBA rivalry. It was personal. Magic and Bird eventually became friends, and it was interesting that Russell and Wilt were close despite being pitted, you know, very consciously against each other. And just it just felt kind of profound seeing these guys looking for connections because, well, you know, they're in this specific space.
Yeah, but they had obviously very strong amount of respect for each other, and that enabled them to not only be competitors on the court, but, you know, but friends off the court until 69.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, when Russell feels like, you know, he said he would never have left the court. You know, he's basically took a shot at Will Chamberlain, which what did that lead to? Led to a disruption of that relationship for a number of years.
Yeah. You know? Until they eventually, it seemed like, you know, came back around, you know, when Bill Russell was being honored.
Yeah, he came back around. It took him a while. But, you know, what's interesting to me, have you seen both parts of the films?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
You know, when Bill Russell's sitting with Jane Kennedy and she's asking him, do you think you and Will can ever, you know, come back together? And his response, man, is like, well, maybe not, but I can live with it. If he can, you know, that's like, wow, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I talked earlier about his intensity. There's almost an intensity to him looking to be Zen. Like, he's going to be the most Zen version of Zen in that moment. That's just crazy.
You know, it's an interesting thing. To one of the other most fascinating moments in the two films is Jerry West basically saying, after all these years, here's a man in his 80s, Andy, and he still can't let go that the Celtics would beat the Lakers so many times when he was a player. He still holds on to that. Wow.
No, it's not surprising at all. If you've ever met Jerry West, and I have a few times, and I certainly know a lot about him, he is in certain respects a permanently miserable guy. I mean, he just fixates on the things that make him miserable. It's just how he's wired. The last question I'd have for you is just, what are you hoping that audiences take away most from this documentary?
I hope that when they finish watching both these films, they'll see that Mr. Bill Russell was not just one of the greatest ball players of all time, but he was a very complicated human being who understood that his role in this world wasn't just to play basketball.
Right.
You know, and then if you really want to even get any deeper into him, go back and read his two books and read all the other books that's been written about Bill Russell. Because you'll find the insights.
Between him and Kareem, you've got two, you know, Hall of Fame, not just basketball players, Hall of Fame writers. Both those guys were really bright, smart writers. Sam Pollard, documentary filmmaker. Again, the movie is on Netflix. It's called Bill Russell, Legend. If you are a basketball fan, even if you are a Laker fan, and remember, Bill Russell showed Kobe tons and tons of respect despite that rivalry, I think you'll really enjoy this documentary. Appreciate the time, Sam. Thank you.
Enjoy your day.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you.
Bye.